When you hear left-leaning people say that they're moving to Canada if Donald Trump gets elected, does it boil your blood as much as it boils mine?
People can make up their own minds.
So should they move to Canada or not, Amy?
Oh, I'm not giving any prescriptions.
Amy, should they move to Canada?
From First Look Media and Panoply, this is Politically Reacted. I'm W. Kamau Bell.
And I'm Hari Kundabolu.
The show where two comedians try to make sense of politics in America.
You've heard of Democracy Now. Well, this is Democracy How.
On today's show, we're going to the conventions. Now, usually the national political conventions are about unifying the parties, but this year, not so much. It started at the RNC with Ted Cruz.
If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom.
Ooh, get off the stage!
Fuck Ted Cruz. And then it continued at the DNC with Bernie Sanders.
We have got to defeat Donald Trump, and we have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine.
No! No! No!
He really needed that little bird to help.
And then finally, our friend, comedian Sarah Silverman, did her bit to try to bring the Feel the Burn crowd into the I'm With Her crowd.
Unity! Unity! Can I just say, to the Bernie or Bust people, you're being ridiculous.
And people didn't like it because she's a woman with an opinion. I'm expecting your hate tweets after the show.
I wonder how all those people are going to feel about our guest today. We're talking to investigative journalist and independent media firebrand Amy Goodman. As the longtime host of Democracy Now!, we'll get her take on what independent media can tell us about this election, and also what the mainstream media doesn't always catch.
It's all coming up on Politically Reactive.
All right, so Hari, we're here in Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention.
Kind of. We've decided not to actually go into the convention, but actually do a recording outside of the convention, because we're with the people.
Or we couldn't get into the convention.
No, apparently being ranked in the top 50 on iTunes means nothing to the DNC.
You're right about that. And we're going to talk to Amy Goodman today.
Amy Goodman.
From Democracy Now!
Amy Goodman.
Okay, all right.
She was Rachel Maddow before Rachel Maddow was Rachel Maddow.
Wow, I don't know if either one of them would like that.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's kind of sexist I'm comparing. But... yeah, I guess so.
No, I don't know if it's. I just wonder, like, do they like each other, or is it like I kind of think of them as like Spider-Man and Superman, like separate universes?
Huh. Well, I mean, Rachel Maddow works for the mainstream media, but she's like questions the media, and Amy Goodman is like kind of doing it from the bottom.
Yeah, started from the bottom,
and now she's a little bit higher. It's hard though. It's independent radio.
But she's like the biggest independent media voice in radio. So
that's,
I mean,
true.
She's got a huge audience. She's on like 1,400 stations, and she's on the web. I mean, you know, just because it's not on your cable box in the channels below 100 doesn't mean it's not happening, Hari.
Okay, I'm just saying, like.
And also, we should let our fans here in Philly know that First Look Media, who produces our podcast, is actually here in Philly too. And they have political cartoonists from the NIB setting up their own campaign headquarters at the DNC, where they will be sketching live in reaction to the convention insanity. So if you are in Philly and want to come by, you can come by 303 Cherry Street in the heart of Philadelphia's historic district today or tomorrow starting at noon and pick up free protest signs, buttons, and swag. And you can check out thenib.com to find out more and sign up for their newsletter. I know we're going to check that out after this, right?
Yeah, I'm just amazed by the fact that you were able to say something that sounded like you read it, but you were not reading it.
No, I was just talking about how excited I am that the Nib is in town here in Philly.
That was very natural.
Yeah, thenib.com. All right. Well, I want to do this interview with Amy Goodman. Can we do that now?
Yeah, let's bring in Amy Goodman.
Amy Goodman.
We have Amy Goodman with us. Thank you for joining us, Amy.
It's great to be with you.
I have a question I think a lot of our listeners have as well, and I think you might be able to answer it. Are we going to be okay?
Do you mean the two of you or everyone?
No, we mean specifically.
Because I don't know you
like
enough.
The country, the world.
The world. With everything that's happening, are we going to
be okay?
I really think we are. because of the movements. Because for all that you're seeing in this country right now, movements are growing, they're consolidating, people are pushing back. And that's really the hope. That's what makes history. So here we are in Philadelphia, and you've got this convention that's taking place at the Wells Fargo Convention Center. And before that last week, it was at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland.
Just local venues.
But I think that it's what's going on outside that counts. Thousands and thousands of people marching, organizing. Yesterday, an immigrants' rights protest. Today, Black Lives Matter, as we're here in the studio, are marching. And the same was happening in Cleveland. And this is a continuation. It's not just at this moment a kind of knee-jerk reaction. These movements have been growing. And we don't know what form it'll take. And we also are not going to find out about this in the corporate media. It doesn't hit their radar screen until the very end or until a window is broken. And so that's why it's cast in such a negative light. But the reason we broadcast from outside in Cleveland and here in Philadelphia at a community television station is because the folks that we talk to, yes, we talk to the people on the convention floor, but we also talk to the people in the streets, and they can't get through the security. I mean, we're all wearing these credentials that give us this privilege and access. But if you don't get to people in the streets, you're not giving an accurate picture, a hopeful picture of what's happening in this country.
As opposed to just reading tweets and assuming that is the public's response.
Right.
You're actually talking to human beings.
And people are networking and they care. You know, you've got the immigrants' rights movement intersecting with the Black Lives Matter movement, which intersects with the gay and lesbian movement. You have, at the same time that all of this is taking place, these what are supposed to be celebrations of democracy, but need so many police to enforce. I want to tell one funny story from Cleveland. You had like, this isn't funny, but like 20 different police departments and state troopers from all over the country who came in. You would walk down the street. The Indiana state troopers would pass by. Sacramento police would pass by. The Cleveland police would. And we were right at the opening to the queue. So you had like, I don't know, 12 women clad in pink, the group code pink, right? Mm-hmm. And they brought 500 tennis balls with them, okay? They were lugging them in bags, and they started to toss them at each other and bounce them in front of the queue. And the tennis balls, they were pink and green, and they said things like, ban guns, not balls. Cleveland police move in, and they start to grab the balls from them because the balls, tennis balls, are on the prohibited list, forbidden list. And they start to grab them. So the supervising officer is there. The commanding officer is taking them. He's telling the officers, take them. One of the officers said, we're supposed to put them. You know, so they said, in balls. Your pockets. So they're taking the balls, right? And they're trying to put them in their pockets, but there's only like so much room. So you've got this pincer movement, the Cleveland police moving in. You've got the Indiana State Troopers moving in. And then you've got the Cleveland police on horseback that are moving in on them as well before they collect all the balls. And here are the women from Code Pink, like Medea Benjamin, who interrupted Donald Trump's speech. But right then she was saying, why are you doing this? Why? He said, these are on the forbidden list. And so she said, fine, but what about AR-15 rifles, right? Automatic rifles. They're not on the forbidden list, he said. So you could walk by. Ohio's an open carry state with automatic, semi-automatic rifles. But you couldn't walk by with tennis balls. And, you know, I said to the police officers when saying, what are you doing? I said, even your police chief has said that there shouldn't be this open carry. It's too dangerous right now. And they said, move back, move back. We're pushing you back. And there's a lot of protests. Look right here in Philadelphia, hundreds of signs. I was trying to count them. People are angry, they're upset, and they're organizing. That's the hope.
So the hope is that people are angry, and I certainly see people angry and upset and organizing. I mean, and the movements are building. I guess there's a sense of like whether if it's Hillary, the movement needs to build. If it's Trump, the movement needs to build faster. It feels like not that it's a – and do we build fast enough to – not defeat Trump is not necessarily the goal, but to maintain a safe bay if he is the president.
I don't know who will be elected president, and I don't...
Well, that's why we brought you here to tell us.
I'm not sure what's going to take place, but I take it all extremely seriously. When you look at Donald Trump, what he has done, ripping open the underbelly of hate in America, and what do I mean by that? I don't say that lightly. You have that questioning Jake Tapper did over at CNN of Donald Trump about whether he would disavow the support of the avowed white supremacist David Duke and the Klan. And Donald Trump, you know, paused. He waffled. He said he'd have to look more deeply into this. Really, when was the last time you heard Donald Trump say he had to look more deeply into anything before he spoke? But on this issue, he did.
Hey, Harry, I know we played that Jake Tapper Klan clip already, but let's play it one more time.
Okay.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but...
He didn't want to generalize to all Klan chapters in the United States and comment. And you put that together with... actually encouraging violence at his rallies. How? Now, I don't think any presidential candidate is responsible for the behavior of the thousands of people. I mean, Trump and Sanders had thousands of people at their rallies. And if you set the tone, if you say, I do not condone violence, okay, that's very important. He didn't do that. And in addition, he said he would pay the legal bills of protesters who got arrested. He said this after North Carolina when a one of his supporters sucker punched a Black Lives Matter activist and afterwards said next time he would kill him.
Well, number one, we don't know if he's ISIS. We don't know who he is, but we know he's not acting like an American.
So he deserved it?
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
And then you have David Duke announcing he's going to run for Senate because he's deeply inspired by Donald Trump.
I hate the fact that, like, I mean, I'm sure there were people who would say, like, well, if we bring all that up, we're swaying the argument. We have to be objective, which is absurd to me. Like, Donald Trump, to me, is objectively a racist. He has made statements that makes that clear. But I don't understand why we don't see more journalists saying he made this racist statement. Well, is it racist? Is it not racist? Maybe it's because, you know, as a person of color. Yeah, this is science to me. See, heard the words. He's a racist, and maybe because the media is mostly still like white men, like it's like, well, we don't know if it was. Is that a racist thing? Why is it so hard to just say someone is a racist?
Say someone's a racist. Say someone is lying. I mean, if it's raining outside and you say it's raining and Donald Trump says it's sunny outside, that doesn't mean you have a political point of view, a kind of he said, right, he said right. thing. There is a fact and there is fiction. And it goes beyond that because I don't like to in any way defame fiction. And there are outright lies. And we have to take this extremely seriously, of course. I mean, what's interesting is the consensus, because I don't think anyone would fault you for saying that the Ku Klux Klan is a racist organization.
Not even the Ku Klux Klan, ironically. They're right. Even like, yes, we are.
Not allegedly racist, but racist. And we have to call acts and tweets and statements what they are.
Hey, hurry. I know we've already played that Jake Tapper Ku Klux Klan Donald Trump clip, but let's play it again.
Well, okay.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but...
Is it frustrating because, like you say, you started in 1996 on a few stations and you've built up to 1,400 stations. But in that time, also the internet has kicked in, social media has kicked in. There's so much more noise that if we were still the same society we were when you started, you would be able to cut through it.
Oh,
does it ever get frustrating?
I don't consider that noise. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of what's done in social media and on the internet is so important because you're challenging the traditional gatekeepers. For example, all the thousands of uninvited guests at these conventions, the people who are outside, they were not getting heard in the papers of record like the New York Times, in the corporate networks. They're not invited in. I mean, think of how Black Lives Matter grew. What did they do? They weren't invited into the corporate networks. They grabbed the microphones at these political events of Hillary Clinton, of Bernie Sanders. That's what they had to do. They had to take it. And they changed the agendas of these politicians. And a lot is organized on the internet, but you cannot replace the actual physical gathering together and how important that is. Look at 2015. There was a report that showed that Donald Trump got like 28 times the coverage of Bernie Sanders. Okay, I think ABC World News Tonight gave 81 minutes to Donald Trump in 2015 and 20 seconds to Bernie Sanders. I don't know what he did that was so newsworthy for that 20 seconds.
But, there were a good 20 seconds. Very inspiring.
Right. Bernie Sanders, get out of the way. Donald Trump's behind you.
And that was 2015. I look at one day. I remember this very well. It was March 15th. It was, I think they called it Super Tuesday 3. So that all the networks, wall-to-wall coverage, which is fine. And they played Marco Rubio, who lost his home state, remember, Marco Rubio, who is running for Senate now, though he said he absolutely wouldn't.
And, yeah.
But he gave his concession speech and he dropped out. And then you had John Kasich. He won his first state, Ohio, his home state. They played that. They played Ted Cruz. They played Hillary Clinton. She had just won North Carolina, Ohio, and Florida. And she was neck and neck with Sanders in Missouri and her home state, Illinois. So this was a big deal. I mean, to be neck and neck in her home state. Yeah. Donald Trump, they showed that little box, all the networks, for minute after minute, for half an hour, all the pundits. You know the pundits and all the networks, those pundits who know so little about so much, explaining the world to us and getting it so wrong, waiting for Donald Trump to speak. They're showing, so it's all about Donald Trump. And then they play his half-hour speech, and then that pretty much wrapped it up, right? You got Trump, Kasich, Cruz, Rubio, Clinton. What about Sanders? Just, they didn't even speculate where he was, let alone play a speech. Where was he? He was in Phoenix, speaking to thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people, by far the largest rally that night. They didn't even go to that speech or mention what was he on vacation? Had he fallen asleep? So that night, Democracy Now!, we decided we weren't going to do this. But the next morning when we broadcast, we played an excerpt of a speech. Now, who would have thunk it? Who would have thought it's a revolutionary act to play an excerpt of a speech of a major party candidate on primary night or the morning after? That's what it has become. It's not about negative coverage. It's about the total erasure. Right? Erasing a person from history. And that even shows how much more powerful that movement is. He didn't create the movement, Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And that's really the hope here. He rode a movement. Occupy, Black Lives Matter, the immigrants' rights movement, all of these different movements gaining strength. And he tapped into that. And the question right now is Hillary Clinton able to galvanize this movement? You hear Donald Trump continually trying to make inroads. He just said, let's get rid of the WTO. Remember, there was the big battle of Seattle. You don't hear Hillary Clinton saying this and saying he's against TPP. But of course, the racism, the xenophobia, the build the wall. I mean, being on the floor of the Republican convention as people were putting their hands up in a cross sign and saying, lock her up and build that wall, build that wall. Where are the voters going to go? The biggest problem is, well, what if they don't go anywhere? Those millions of people who decide just not to vote unless someone appeals to them.
Hey, Harry, I know I already played that Jake Tapper Ku Klux Klan Donald Trump clip, but let's play it again.
Is that a fair thing to do? Yes.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but...
We've spoken already about just the mainstream media not providing truth, not searching for truth, like basically serving the interests of whether it's corporations, whether it's these campaigns. People find truth. They look for it. The people outside the convention are finding truth. And I think a great example of this is WikiLeaks, right? We find out that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chairwoman, was conspiring against Bernie Sanders, you know, potentially with the Clinton campaign. Now, when I hear a thing like that, I'm like, this is why conspiracy theories exist. Like, where's the moon landing information? Like, you start to question it because things like this, like, he's been saying it the whole time, and then all of a sudden it was true. It was true. They were conspiring. Are you surprised? Did you see signs of this from the beginning?
Well, I mean, I think there was no question that it seemed like the DNC was very much in Hillary's pocket, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Congress member from Florida who headed up the DNC, very much favored Hillary Clinton, and lots of things indicated that. But this was the evidence. I just interviewed Julian Assange, who's holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, passed his – he just – you can't say celebrated his fourth anniversary there. But he's been there for 4 years. He got
I hope
political –
I hope he got him a cake, for the sake of trying to make something out of a bad situation.
I hope him and Edward Snowden get to communicate, like, what are you having at your embassy?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm having at mine.
Hey, Kamau, when Julian Assange and Edward Snowden talk, you think they, like – talk about how terrible their hell holes are?
Do they ask each other questions like, hey, what do you miss about going outside?
Oh, time for dinner. It's delivery again.
Nah, it's probably always DiGiorno. I have to say, if I had to be politically asylum someplace, I think I'd rather pick Ecuador than Moscow just because of the food.
I wonder if they have Yelp in the, in Moscow.
I feel like I want to make a bad Yakov Smirnoff joke here. In Moscow, we have Yelp just for toilet paper. What a country.
That's not racist. Russians are white. Actually, come on. He's actually in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, so he's technically not in Ecuador.
Wait a minute. He's got political asylum in London?
Yes.
Doesn't seem that bad.
We believe there is a sealed indictment against him in this country, possibly for treason, for releasing all the documents he has, millions of documents, the State Department cables, the Afghan cables, the Iraq war logs. And now he gets a hold of this 20,000 emails. And what do they say? I mean, they're astounding. This isn't an opposition party. You know, they do opposition research, all their dirty dealings, another party. They go after a candidate and they try to stir up anything about a candidate. This is the Democratic National Committee that is supposed to be there, a fair arbiter, you know, representing all the candidates. And it says they're saying things like, why don't we raise, as one top official said, hey, for the West Virginia and for our West Virginia and Kentucky, I think they said Baptist peeps, it will be significant to talk about Bernie Sanders' religion, Judaism, and the fact that he's an atheist. Maybe atheism matters more than the fact that he's Jewish. Something like this.
They get more upset about?
Right, this isn't the Trump campaign.
Yeah.
This is the DNC. And what happens at the end? I mean, this just also shows the power of movements. I mean, Bernie Sanders was pushing back on this the whole time. Behind the scenes, they were fighting the DNC because they saw this happening and putting out dirty stories on him. And when this came out, they couldn't deny it. And so that forced Debbie Wasserman Schultz to resign. And what does Hillary Clinton do? Immediately says she's a dear friend or a good friend and she's going to put her in charge of 50 state outreach. Well, that proves exactly what the Sanders campaign was saying, that she's very close. The arrogance of that, saying, yes, we're confirming now, finally, not just the emails, but everything that you have believed. She is a dear friend and she just will move over. She's hard. hardly moving over to another position because that's what she was doing.
Sometimes I feel like with the Clintons, it's like, do you not know we can see you? Like, I feel like that the get to the back door dealings. They're supposed to happen behind a closed door. You're happening like that. That the fact that it was so instant that she was hired on, I was just like,
right. Wow. And every time you hear them say the optics of this, I mean, it's not just the optics. It's the content. It matters.
Now, do you, and I certainly understand you have a large audience. Do you feel like you have, do you have a politically broad audience?
Yes, that's what I feel. It's across the political spectrum. I mean, we're seeing that even with the elections. People are utterly frustrated. They see that the system is corrupt, that it's locking them out. I mean, look at the figures. What did Oxfam put out a report that said something like, 67 of the wealthiest people in the world have more wealth than half the world's population. And like two-thirds of them, 42, 43 of them, are from the United States. You could fit them in a school bus.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
So yeah, I'm on Forbes.com, and Amy Goodman was right. Not a surprise. But 67 people are as wealthy as the world's poorest 3.5 billion people. 67 people, and according to Amy, they're in a school bus, which means she doesn't really know a lot about rich people because they don't generally all get on school buses.
Yeah, what rich person's on a bus? Is it an air bus?
Maybe it's like a Kardashian party bus.
Maybe it's like a magic school bus that goes inside people's bodies and whatnot.
What, do you need to drink some water?
Yeah.
Be a really nice
and here
bus.
They are shutting down schools, you know, austerity all over the country. And that's another thing. We don't see ourselves as part of trends in the world, whereas the rest of the world does. We're very insulated. So when you see Donald Trump in this country, you know, the rise of the right wing in Austria and Greece and Britain, you know, now everything that's happening there, there was this amazing moment, by the way, right when Brexit happened, when the people of Britain voted to leave the European Union. That there was Donald Trump flying into the Trump Turnberry golf course that he was he wanted to publicize at this critical moment. And he could have said, this guy is brilliant. It shows that a businessman can deal with global politics. The world's media, the U.S. media was certainly there as he flew in and landed. I think like 15 minutes before, an hour before, David Cameron announced he was resigning, the prime minister of Britain. So this is the moment and he's now going to speak. And what does he say? Something like, all the media is there. It's live. He knows it. You see this historic lighthouse behind me? I think he's going to talk about something, you know, a metaphor. For this historic
sort of
lighthouse behind
metaphor,
me.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, we're this is part of the Trump Turnberry golf course, and we're leasing out the rooms. You can rent them. And it luxury golf course here, you know, we have changed the fourth hole, the fifth hole, and you can now look over the Atlantic Ocean as you play, and you can have a 10-course meal at the 10th hole, whatever it is, with world-class chefs.
As the UK's Brexit vote sent markets plunging overseas and at home, Donald Trump was touring his Scottish golf course and promoting his resort.
Inside the lighthouse right now is incredible suites.
He completely uses his advertisement. Yeah. All of the media, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, they're all playing this. I mean, he plays the media and he knows how to do that. And they're just running this ad. And then he says he's off to Aberdeen, his other golf course.
You certainly cover the convention and watch everything that you say. Do you have moments of feeling like inspired by a speech or feeling like people like, you know, like when like the conventions are set up to sort of make us feel good, depending upon your political affiliation? Like, you know, like Michelle Obama spoke recently and there was a lot of talk about that speech being inspiring. And do you feel that, or are you so focused on the, well, what are you going to do next? You know, that you can't have those moments of inspiration.
Well, I mean, the question is, what should be done next? When Michelle Obama, though, talked about raising her African-American daughters in a house, the White House built by slaves, That is so important to understand what the legacy of this country has been and how much further we have to go and how so many people have fought to change this country and have come a long way, but we have so much longer to go. So sure, when you hear people's – it's not just soaring rhetoric. When you hear the truth spoken, it's deeply inspiring.
When you hear left-leaning people say that they're moving to Canada if Donald Trump gets elected, does it boil your blood as much as it boils mine? Like you're just going to run away as opposed to fighting and you have the privilege to run away, but you don't use that privilege to fight. Does it boil your blood too?
Well, as a journalist, I cover what people do and talk about it, debate it. So that people can make up their own minds.
So should they move to Canada or not, Amy?
Oh, I'm not giving any prescriptions.
Amy, but should they move to Canada?
For such an opinionated person, suddenly, no, I can't give that opinion.
They shouldn't move to Canada. The answer is they should not move to Canada.
She's saying she can broadcast Democracy Now! From anywhere on the planet, right, including Canada.
They shouldn't move to it's a place where they have single-payer health care. Is that what they're moving for? Certainly I see, you know, obviously, we live in this country and there's so much that we have to fight for. And what we do in the United States has a tremendous influence on the rest of the world. Years ago, I was interviewing a woman from Guyana on a whole other subject. Then we went to our music break and I said, okay, so you're done and now we're going to talk about the U.S. elections. And we were bringing in other guests and she wouldn't get up. And I said, excuse me, we're moving on to the U.S. elections. And so she said, right, I want to be a part of the discussion. I said, oh, actually, do you vote here? And she said, no, I'm from Guyana. But I think everyone in the world should get to vote for president of the United States.
Yeah, wow.
Absolutely.
It's a really interesting point.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I can already hear Donald Trump. No. Wow. That's interesting.
You don't think he wants to be king of the world?
Oh, yeah. But I don't think he wants people to vote that yet. I think he just wants it. I think he just wants it. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Amy. We really appreciate it.
Oh, well, I really appreciate being here.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks.
So, Hari, what did we learn today?
We learned that Amy Goodman believes in the power of the people to organize and demand change.
I learned that her show has more viewers than mine. I don't know that I like that too much.
And I also learned that Amy Goodman is very passionate and has no time for our jokey nonsense. I learned that David Duke is running again because of Donald Trump.
I've learned that 20 seconds of Bernie Sanders is all that some people need.
I learned with regards to whether Bernie voters should vote for Hillary Clinton, Amy Goodman will not answer. Even again, it's obvious. Amy, it's obvious.
Is it obvious?
Yes.
Is it obvious?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not so obvious, is it? Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all who have commented on Twitter using the hashtag PoliticallyReactive. We've gotten some good feedback and good show ideas. We'll address some of your questions soon, so keep them coming.
And if you haven't done so, hit that subscribe button on whatever you're using to listen. And maybe think about leaving us a nice little review. It's super helpful to spread the word for new shows like ours and make us famouser.
And you know what? Don't just maybe think about leaving us a review. Go to iTunes now and give us a good review. We really need you. It'll really help.
Give us a good review. Give us a good review.
And if you're really feeling us, check out some of our other projects.
I have a new album out on Kill Rock Stars called Mainstream American Comic, which you can buy all over the internet. And I'm also about to go on tour, and you can find the dates for that at HariKundabolu.com.
And I've got lots of stuff going on, too. I got two kids. You can help me raise them. I got other podcasts like Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor of All Time, period. And my live radio show and podcast, Kamau Right Now. And I'm also going on tour. Check out my site for all the dates at WKamauBell.com.
Politically Reactive is a production of First Look Media and distributed by Panoply. The team includes Nick Borenstein, Lisa Leingang, Erica Moo, and Max Jacobs. The show is engineered by Ted Muldoon.
Thanks to Amy Goodman for joining us today. Please check her out on her show, Democracy Now! If you don't listen already, it's one of the best news sources out there.
Thanks to Baker Sound in Philadelphia for studio space this week. And thanks to Brontez Purnell for providing music for the show.
I'm W. Kamau Bell, and this has been Politically Reactive.
And I'm Hari Kunabolu. Thank you for listening. Leave a good review. Leave a good review.
I've learned that we're going to play that Jake Tapper Donald Trump clip again. I like that one.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did he endorse me or what's going on? Because, you know, I know nothing about David Duke. I know nothing about white supremacists.
And I learned that we are probably going to play that clip over and over and over again, in case you forgot.
Even if you don't know about their endorsement, there are these groups and individuals endorsing you. Would you just say, unequivocally, you condemn them and you don't want their support?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I have to look.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but
he doesn't want to lose that Klan vote.